We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Welcome to Special Edition, a weekly look at the issues in the news and the personalities shaping the stories. Special Edition is a production of Intercom Communications.
Welcome to Special Edition. I'm Paula Dagnan. Today, we'll be talking with Todd Hevner. He's the executive director of the SPCA of Luzerne County. He has some very good tips for you if you're thinking about adopting a dog. And right now, it is Adopt a Senior Dog Month. He'll have more on that. We're going to start off by introducing you to, well, he's a new fellow on the block for this area, but he actually grew up around here. Richard Roman. He is the new district executive for PennDOT District 4. Rich, you'll find out, grew up in the Hazleton area and has spent his most recent time with PennDOT in Harrisburg. What brought him back here to northeastern Pennsylvania, and in particular, PennDOT District 4 in Dunmore? We'll find out. And welcome Rich Roman to Special Edition. Well, congratulations, Rich. You're brand new. Wait a minute now. I'm all confused. Mm-hmm. Give us your background. How did you get involved here with PennDOT?
Well, I've been with the department for 23 years now. I actually started in this area while I was going to Penn State, Hazleton, and Penn State main campus. I did three internships during the summers while I was going to Penn State. This would have been in 92, 93, and 94. I worked up here in the summers. I graduated from Penn State in May of 96, and I went to work for PennDOT in 97 in the Harrisburg area. And I've been in the Harrisburg area for about 21 years out of a district office there. And for the last 5 years, I was the director of our maintenance and operations forces for our entire state. So for the last 5 years, I've been traversing the state and visiting every county and looking at ways so we could be better and serve the public to the best of our abilities with the resources that we have. This past year, my boss, our deputy secretary, asked if I was interested if I wanted to go back to work in a district. And I said I was, and it was my home district here in District 4.
Give us a little bit of that background. Yeah, you started off in college, but you have a little bit more lower Luzerne County history than that.
Sure. I live in Hazleton with my folks and my family down there. I'm a graduate of Hazleton Senior High School in 1991.
Go Cougars.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I was a Mountaineer back then in 91, so
I
was a Go Mountaineers. That's okay. Before they combined all the schools down there.
Oh, okay.
So I graduated in 91, went to Penn State Hazleton, and did the thing through civil engineering, environmental engineering, and then I went to main campus out in State College. It's like I said, I graduated in 96, and I've just been in transportation since then. And I've really enjoyed my 23 years now with PennDOT. I'm glad to have the internships that really got me a taste of what my education could do for me after I graduated. So I'm a big fan of students doing internships and trying things, because you may try something and really like it, like I was fortunate to have, but you also may try something and not like it, and maybe that means you have to go a different path. So having those internships with PennDOT was a great starter for me.
So what got you involved in engineering? Was that something that, as a kid, you liked watching things, or was
it necessarily.
Just something?
Not necessarily. It was really one where my mom and dad really stressed education with my brother and I, and they really pushed us to strive for greater academics. And I would say probably in junior high and high school, I really enjoyed math, and I took some drafting courses in high school, and those two kind of just blended for me. And it just kind of bloomed into something like that. And it was just very simple, just having that education, working through the Hazleton School District, and really the emphasis from my mom and dad to stress education and academics to really provide yourself with a living. And I found a couple things that I liked, the drafting courses. I think I took them in high school because my brother had taken them. So I figured, well, if he took them, I could take them too. And I enjoyed it. And I ended up doing it, and really kind of that was the seed of it. And then when I went to Penn State and started taking the courses, you know, I really had a love for it. But I'll say this again to repeat. When I was encouraged by one of our professors to kind of broaden and deepen my resume to do an internship. So I started that process, putting in applications, and I ended up getting an internship out of the office here in Dunmore. And that's really when it solidified working for PennDOT in those summers. And being on construction projects, being out in the field, doing the testing, doing some of the basic entry-level engineering courses, it really instituted to me that this was something that I wanted to do. And like I said, I ended up doing 3 summers here in Dunmore area, mainly in Lower Luzerne County in Hazleton. They tried to keep me close to home to keep the travel down, so that was good.
Yeah.
And then that really just solidified what I wanted to do for my living. And it just really pushed me more academically to finish up and to get into the industry.
I think it's always interesting when students start off in one location and all of a sudden, many years later, they come back and they're doing this and that and the other thing. And you often wonder where people come from, where they get their start, how they get involved. Because, again, with PennDOT, at that time, it wasn't PennDOT like it is today. So that must have been a little bit different as well. Do they still have internships and things like that as well?
Oh, yes. We bring on in District 4, I think, about 55 college interns every summer. And they still do certain things for us in construction, in design, and in maintenance. And they really help us out over that three-month period of time. We give them projects. We give them activities to do that are meaningful for us, not just busy work. So we get a benefit of getting some work done from them, and they get the benefit of having an internship, a paid internship, which is great.
That's even
but also
better.
They start to get that experience whether they like it or not, if this is something that's for them or not. And to me, that's a great opportunity. Like I said, I stress to anybody that I talk to about getting an internship and seeing, because there's an academic side to every major.
Oh,
as
yeah.
you know, and you
oh,
think,
yeah.
well, I get the book work, but do I get it when it's in practice? And it'd be a shame to go through the academic side and not have it where you don't like the practice of it.
So you said you were given the opportunity to come back into a district, mm-hmm. and you've been in Harrisburg. What have you been doing down there?
So in Harrisburg, I worked in our district based out of Harrisburg, which is up here is District 4.
Right.
I worked in District 8, which is the 8-county district that surrounds Harrisburg, Cumberland County, down from to Gettysburg, York, and Lancaster. I worked for 12 years in the design side of the house there in the district. So I was a highway designer, designing projects and putting them out for contract. Then about 12 years into my career there, they asked me to shift my duties and work in maintenance, and I became the head of maintenance for the district.
Maintenance how?
Maintenance of our highway system. So that's the crews that fill potholes, to plowing snow, to repairing guide rail, to putting signs up, removing dead deer from the road, paving, all the things that our forces do to maintain and operate our system. So I did that for about 4 years.
And you were in charge of that?
I was in charge of that
so
for the district.
So you got all the dead deer calls?
I got a lot of calls, yes. We got District 8's a pretty big district with a lot of impact, and you know it's around our capital, so we got a lot of eyes down there, and we got a lot of good calls. But the folks down there did a good job like they do all across the organization. So for 4 years, I ran the maintenance department for the district. Then after that, there were some openings in our central office, which is right next door to the Capitol building, which is the Keystone building.
Mm-hmm.
And I was asked and applied for a position to be in charge of the maintenance and operations for all of the department, all the Commonwealth. So for the past 5 years, I was in charge of our Bureau of Maintenance and Operations, which works with our engineering districts and focuses on the maintenance and operation activities for all 67 counties within Pennsylvania.
That's a lot of potholes.
It's a lot of everything. You know, in Pennsylvania, we operate and maintain about 40,000 miles of roads and 25,000 bridges. And we're a state where our entire state sees snow.
Oh.
So there's a lot of states that are bigger than us, say Florida, but you know, they don't have any freeze or thaw or snow like we do. So we have all the four seasons, which makes Pennsylvania a great state to live and work in. But it's quite a challenge when you're trying to maintain roads that have 20 to 30 cars a day to areas around Philadelphia County and Philadelphia City that have 150,000 cars a day and so everything in between.
Now you're back in District 4, mm-hmm. which takes up, again, its own good size area, mm-hmm. as we all know. And what are you going to be actually doing here? Do you still have your fingers in all of that, or have you shifted again?
Well, I've shifted now to solely District 4. So PennDOT District 4 has six counties. Right. We have Luzerne and Lackawanna. We have Susquehanna and Wyoming. We have Pike and Wayne. So I'm responsible for all of the PennDOT activities in those six counties. So I'm responsible for the design, construction, maintenance, operations, making sure we do the proper press releases and press announcements, integration with the public, safety, and all that. So I am out of my old job running just maintenance for the state to now running all of the functions with my team, naturally, for just this district.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. So you're the man that we go to.
Yes, I'm the man for this area now. Yes, along with my staff, of course.
Well, of course. Yeah, yes. We can't forget about them.
Sure.
And before we go any further, I know that there has been a release out, and I'm going to say guide rail.
Mm-hmm.
And then I can hear them all. Hear them? Guide yep. rail. It's a guard rail. What yep. are you talking? What's the deal? Yeah. Guide guard.
Now that is a puzzling question that many people are waiting to hear the answer to. Don't go away. Rich Roman, the new district executive for PennDOT District 4 in Dunmore, will be back to answer that question and many more when Special Edition continues. Welcome back to Special Edition. I'm Paula Degnan. Today, we're pleased to have with us Richard Roman. Rich is the district executive for PennDOT District 4. He's been telling us a little bit about his background and has the answer to a question that many in our area have been asking. When did the guardrail become a guide rail?
Well, several years ago, it used to be called guardrail.
Right.
But based on a court case, the name was changed to guide rail because of the function of what it's to do. And it's really to keep you from going down over the bank, off the side of the road, and it's to guide you along the shoulder to keep you still upright.
So it's not guarding
you. It's not guarding you from anything. It's supposed to guide you. If you're going off the road, it's to guide you to stay on the shoulder. So it's more of a guiding type of activity than a guarding type of activity. It's very semantic. It's very bureaucratic. But we call it guide rail, and we hope that we do right by putting it in the locations that protect people and guide them from going off the roadway.
All right. So now that we have the semantics correct, now that we have that part of the semantics correct, what is that project, and is that coming here to District 4?
Mm-hmm. It's coming really across the nation. Basically, federal transportation research has simply found that vehicles now are higher than they were 20 years ago. Okay. More people are driving SUVs, mm-hmm. pickup trucks, and even just the regular old minivan. They're sitting higher off the ground now. And some of that is for convenience. Some of that is for just size. You need to pack more people in. You're sitting higher. Maybe you feel a little bit safer, right? So from the cars that my mom and dad had growing up in that were lower, now they're a little bit higher. So through research, and this is the research where they take a car and they crash it into a guide rail and they study it. You may have seen that online or mm-hmm. on the internet. And, mm-hmm. and what they're saying is that cars are higher now. So the goal when you run into guide rail is that you hit that rail that's on the post. So right now that rail is sitting at about 27 inches off of the ground, which really served the cars from 20 years ago. But now we're going to be raising that rail 4 inches so that the higher cars hit from the bumper into that rail and not have that opportunity to drive over it.
Ah.
Because they're higher.
Okay.
So we're going through a process of analyzing how much of guide rail we have on our interstates and expressways and all across our entire system, not only in District 4, but in the rest of the state. And that's a mandate from Federal Highway Administration that over time, each state has to come up with a plan to make their guide rails basically more practical for what the vehicles were driving today.
Did someone ask the DEER?
We haven't heard back from them yet.
Whether they can clear them or not.
Oh, I've seen deer clear a lot higher than just 31 inches, but we're still waiting for their survey back.
Well, yeah. I'm just curious because, again, as you mentioned earlier, mm-hmm. in our area, as in many of the other areas that in the state, deer are a pretty big concern.
Sure.
And they're showing up in more places than you would think.
Oh, yeah.
So if there's any way that we can do that.
A deer could jump over a 31-inch guide rail with ease. Unfortunately, why we're seeing a lot more deer around is, you know, a lot of their environment is being taken over, right, mm-hmm. through development and other things. And that's no political statement. That's just a fact.
No,
it's
a fact.
If we're building more things and we're cutting down more trees, we're taking away their environment. And they're scrambling to find other places. And especially now while they're doing their thing here before the winter season, they're very active and aggressive. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's something in the time that I've been coming up to District 4 now, I've had many deer run in front of me. And it's startling. And you just really have to be mindful because you may not see them and they're right there and they're fast. And it's very startling. But, you know, we have to do our best to kind of share the road with them if we can.
Well, let's talk a little bit about, too, the idea of constructing. And you said that one of the things that you have long been involved in and now here will be the idea of roads.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people will say, well, why did they put this road here? It's so curvy. It's so, mm-hmm. you know, all of a sudden you're coming along and there's a big, like, how do they make those decisions?
Well, a lot of it is just the geography of northeastern Pennsylvania. We're in the mountains, and this is a beautiful area. But when you have all the mountains and the streams, that carves through our landscape, and our goal is to navigate through that. So this isn't Oklahoma where it's all flat and there's no hills. I was in Florida recently, and you could drive around there, and you could see for miles because there's no hills, and mm-hmm. and a lot of the roads in southern Florida are just a simple grid because they could. Well, here, you got to really search for a flat area, especially, you know, coming up from Hazleton every day. It's all hills and curves and major intersections. So our goal is to kind of weave our network in where people are living and where they're going to. And sometimes that means we have some curves and downgrades. And our job is to make sure that we have that as safe as we can. We have a proper speed limit posted. We have any advisory signs that may help people make better decisions while they're going down through it. And we need to make sure that during the winter season, you know, we clear those roads as safely and as quickly as we can be. But to me, we also need the traveling public to help us with that too, by maybe slowing down a little bit in bad weather, allowing some more time to get to your location, mm-hmm. And those sorts of things. So it's just the nature of the landscape of living in a beautiful area here.
So do you take that into consideration when you're planning a roadway? Because I know a lot of people will say, why would they put this hairpin turn at the bottom of the hill right. when we know we're going to have a snowstorm?
Yeah.
And you have snow that'll blow out onto the... You're laughing. You've got a smile on your face.
Because I've seen it.
You've heard it.
I've seen it, but you know, when you think of it, when you get down to the bottom of the hill and you have to turn, unless we take that hill out, which would probably triple or quadruple the cost of the project, we have to put that turn in. Because I've seen them and I drive on them. But in the end, if you're ever along that hairpin turn and could safely kind of look up and say, well, how could we ever get rid of this? We would have to take that mountain out, which would cost millions and millions of dollars, which we don't have. So we'd rather put that hairpin turn in and maybe let people know in advance of that hairpin turn that it's coming, mm-hmm. To use caution and to slow down, because we're kind of building in the environment that we're living in, and it's just not that flat. And if we had to take down every mountain that had a hairpin curve at the bottom, mm-hmm. we wouldn't have any mountains up
We'd
here.
We'd be Florida.
We would be Florida. And I don't know, you know, it just doesn't, financially, it just doesn't make sense to do that. So we try and make it as safe as we can for folks.
When we talk about financially as well, and of course, we have had many conversations with James May, and he's given us a lot of reasons for fixing potholes and there are new apps that are out there and things like that. But when we're talking about financially now, are you also going to be looking at those kind of things as well, where you're, okay, we've got these potholes? Because that seems to be the biggest thing.
Sure.
Is the, you know, and construction.
Yeah, that's really a large part of my job and my key staff in the district is making sure we're doing the right activities at the right time with the money that we have. We all know there's a certain level of a gas tax and revenue that comes into PennDOT. We do our best with what we're giving, whatever that number is. And we're really examining our activities and our operations right now to determine if we should change some of those so we could do more effective treatments like more pothole patching, more base repair, more basic things to keep the roadway alive, so to speak, until we could get to larger projects. Using maybe federal dollars or capital state project dollars. So for us, we're really looking at, all right, since the time I've been here, we've met with all of our forces and talking through, you know, some of the activities. And we're really starting to formulate that maintenance first mentality back to our core business of maintaining roadways properly and safely. So we could get out of the pothole business sooner. We're never going to be totally out of it, just because of the nature of the weather here and the precipitation, but also that freeze-thaw that goes on every spring. We're never going to not have potholes, no matter what funding is or gas taxes. It's just physics, right, in a way. But my goal is, how do we get out of pothole season as quick as we can so we could do other things? And there's a whole host of operations that need to be done prior to doing potholes to allow us to do potholes and move on. And that's really what we're focusing back in on here.
I know there's also been a lot of town meetings, especially when you're going into an area. I think there was just one up in Susquehanna County, and there's always something. Are you going to be taking part in those as well?
I was at the Susquehanna County Town Hall last week, and then yesterday James and I did a sort of a town hall with Ryan Leckie. So for me, I am very proud of the work that PennDOT does, And I'll go to mostly any town hall that I'm invited to talk about the great work that PennDOT does, but also to talk through the issues that we have. You know, as I said last week in Susquehanna County, we're not a perfect organization. We have great men and women that are working hard and doing the best they can. There are limitations to things. You know, just a year ago, we forget that this area was decimated with tremendous flooding. And you don't just snap your fingers and recover from that. You know, this past winter, it seemed like it never wanted to end. We were going into April and it was still cool and getting flurries.
That's when we'd like Florida.
Yeah, right, that nice flat grid system. Yeah. So to me, there's a lot of great things with living in the Northeast. But you have to realize there's also some things that are some headwinds with snow and all that. So for me, you know, we need to do the best we can with what we have, with where we all live. And for me, I think we have the people and the troops to do that. But it takes time. You know, like I said, when you had a tremendous amount of rains last August and September, that's not that far away. It's just 12 months past. And we did a lot of projects just to bring roads open, not to make them any better or to widen them or to make them any smoother. Just to reopen them was really a Herculean effort.
And it doesn't matter what you use on the roads when it comes down to the fact that there are snow and there's a flood and it takes anything. It can take concrete.
One of the things Mother Nature is very humbling.
Yes.
And we could have triple the budget and triple the staff. But if you get 10 inches of rain in a day, you can't overcome that. And you get snow and you get freezing. So to me, we have to be mindful of that. So we have to know there's ways to overcome some of the things that Mother Nature provides us. by making sure we're doing the proper drainage work, that we're clearing pipes out, that we're putting in the right size, that we're properly staffed. There's things, but you can never beat it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's okay.
So what would you like to leave with our listeners since you're the new kid on the block?
Well, to me, I'm glad to be back in my home area and working for a great organization that's PennDOT. What I've said to people, and I said it yesterday and last week, we have great staff that every day are trying to make our system safe and passable for everybody. I know PennDOT sometimes gets a bad rap, especially in the Northeast here. But the people that I've seen here, the people that I've been working with, they're why I wanted to come back, because of the work that they're doing. And I think if we have a plan in place and we're developing that plan, I hope in time that people will see that we're really doing our best to serve them. We're not going to be perfect. That's a whole nother discussion. but we're going to be very good. And I'm confident that we could do that. And in the end, it's about safety. Our jobs and everything that we do is really about the safety of the traveling public, but also our employees as well. On my way up here today, I drove through two or three work zones already with people starting their day out on Interstate 81 and Route 309. And we need to make sure that I want all those people to go home at the end of the day, just like I want all the commuters to go home today, too. So it's really all about safety. And some people may question our decisions, why we say yes to this and no to that. You know, when we sit down and make those decisions, one, we make it with a group of people. It's not just me and we bang a gavel and that's it. But we also talk about what's the safety component here? What are the risks if we do it? What are the risks if we don't do it?
And why does it take so long?
It's just the nature of the beast sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the times with the money that we get, there's timing with it. Sometimes federal dollars aren't available for certain years. And you have to be able to deliver the money that you get each year. So it's just the process that it takes. And that process, it may seem bureaucratic from the outside, and it might be, but it's really to make sure that we're checking off all the boxes properly so that we can provide a safe system. Because when you think of it, if we rebuild a section of Interstate 81 here, you know, that's a 24/7, 365 business that always has to be open. And the interstates have been open since the 50s.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're considering it like a small business, when we build those bridges, we want that bridge to last 100 years. That's a long time to be in service. So it may take an extra 6 months to design it and build it and do it properly. But when we cut the ribbon on that bridge, if we're building a bridge now, we don't want to replace that until, you know,
we're
100
not
years
here.
From now. Yeah, it's someone else's problem. And that's how it should be. So it may take a little bit extra in the front. But when you think of how long our infrastructure has to be in place, it's a tremendous investment.
Well, I'm not even going to ask you about roundabouts.
Okay. Dodge the bullet there.
I'll leave that one. We'll get
for
James,
the next time.
We'll get James May down here. Or, yeah, the next.
Sure.
That was going to be my next question. Are we not going to see you now, or are you going to go back into your office?
Well, I hibernate all winter, so you won't see me. But, no, I will, like I said, I will do any public event that makes sense to talk about PennDOT. So if this is something that you or the station would want me to do. Like I said, we did a town hall and a lot of folks, why we question that. And then I said to my staff, I wouldn't mind if every county wanted to do a town hall, because I'm proud of the work PennDOT does. And I'm proud of what we do here in District 4. So if there's ever an opportunity that you wanted to talk with me or my staff in a different forum or this forum, we're glad to do it. Now, that's not saying I want to do a town hall every day. I do have a day job.
Yeah.
That's why we have James and he does a great job of it. But when there's things that you want to talk through engineering-wise or technically-wise, I would have no problem bringing my staff down and doing it, or even myself. So whatever you need from us, please just reach out.
See, sometimes I think that's what the public needs, too, because your office does a great job with that. But there are just so many questions, and people look at it, and all they say is, or all they see is, this is the way it looks. And they don't understand that sometimes it takes a long time,
yeah,
or there's a reason, or, you know, what you find when you dig in order to change something. So, yeah, maybe we'll take you up on that.
Sure. Anytime.
And And our thanks once again to Rich Roman, the new district executive for PennDOT District 4 here in Dunmore. We'd like to thank him for coming by and spending some time with us. Get to know him as the new kid on the block. Now, don't go away. We're also going to find out what it means to adopt a senior pet. That's what November is, Adopt a Senior Pet Month. And we're going to take a trip to the SPCA of Luzerne County. Todd Hevner, Executive Director, will be here with some great tips and some other suggestions for taking care of your pet on Special Edition. Welcome back to Special Edition. We love our pets. We love spending time with them, and we love when they love us back. So, how do we know what kind of a pet we're going to get, especially if we're adopting one? Somebody like Todd Hevner, the executive director of the SPCA of Luzerne County, and the staff can help answer all those questions. But Todd's here today to answer some others. Todd, being in charge of the SPCA in Luzerne County, a pretty big task.
It is.
And you get it from all sides. A lot of times you're wrong. A lot of times you're right. What's your background to get you prepared for all this?
Well, I spent roughly a decade in the animal welfare industry. Previous to that, I did nonprofit housing for also about a decade. So I've been in the nonprofit field my entire professional life. And a little later in that professional career, I found my heart, my passion, which is the animals.
What brought you here?
I was working at York County SPCA, and an opportunity opened up here in Luzerne County. There were already some synergies between the two organizations in York County and Luzerne. I love the area. I think it's beautiful. It is, my wife and I are very big outdoors people, and Luzerne County has a absolute ton to offer in that respect. So it made sense for us to come up here and enjoy all the beauty that Luzerne County has to offer.
When you're talking about the fact that you were involved in York County and now you're in Luzerne County, do you find that there are a lot of similarities in the different things that the organization has to deal with?
There are. There's a lot of similarities. There's also a lot of differences just between the two communities themselves. You know, one of the biggest challenges with animal welfare as a whole is it's an incredibly emotionally taxing environment. We see the ugly of the ugly and the best of the best. You know, it's heartwarming to watch animals go home to their new forever families. And it's also heartbreaking to watch the next animal come through the door that may be in various states of disrepair or abused or abandoned. We have a team of very unique individuals that their heart's in the right place. And we do the very best we can with the animals that find themselves in our care.
Take us through a typical day, I guess. Maybe it's more than a day. Let's say that you get a report of an animal that's, and I hate when I see this, they're in the middle of the road.
Nah.
And you know you shouldn't chase them, but it's your first instinct just to get them off the road.
Sure.
So you get the call. What happens?
You know, when we get the call, usually animals are brought to us by private citizens. They've picked them up off the road. They've found them in their backyard wandering, whatever the case may be. And once they find themselves in our care, we then begin to go through some very basic foundation steps of trying to identify the animal through a microchip, a license, or some other identifiable feature of the animal. And now we then go into the process of trying to match that animal up with a lost owner. If that is not feasible, they go into our kennel and spend 48 hours on a hold process in order for that owner to come forward. After 48 hours, our organization has elected to hold an additional 24 hours, so a total of 72 hours we're waiting for an owner to come forward, and then the animal will go up for adoption. They'll see our veterinarian to make sure they're healthy, or if there are any needs we need to address while they're in our care. And then it becomes trying to keep them happy, comfortable, social, and, you know, looking for their next family.
And one of the things, too, is once they find that forever home, you want to hope they stay there.
Absolutely. You know, the SPCA of Luzerne County is, we do a lot of things, and we do a lot of things well. There are Humane Society police work, our respite care and adoption programs. But some things that we'd really like our community to know is we're a resource. Call us. If you're having an issue with your animal, call us. We may not have the immediate answer in-house, but we can certainly provide you the guidance and where to sort of seek out that information or that assistance that you're looking for.
And how do you determine then? Because again, you have so many people and birthday time, Christmas time, oh, I want a puppy, I want a kitty, I want a kitten kind of thing. That's tough.
It is. We have an application process. It's a relatively simple application process where we're looking for just some basic identifiable information about the individual. But then we take it a second step, and we're looking at your animal history. Did you ever own animals? If you did, what type of animals? Did you vet them with a local veterinarian? And then we also call some personal references just to make sure, you know, everything is on the up and up. Our main goal when we have animals in our care is to find them and set them up in their next forever home. That's a positive, successful placement. We do the best to set the animal up for success rather than obviously setting them up for failure. So we really do our best to pair the animal with the right family. And it goes further than, you know, I like that breed or I like that animal. Does that breed or that particular animal match your lifestyle? If you're, I often say, if you're a marathon runner, the Jack Russell is not your guy. Okay, you're looking for more an endurance dog or something of that nature. So we really try to marry your needs as a pet parent with the needs of the individual animal that's looking for their next home.
And again, that must be very difficult because when you have people coming in, as you said, your goal is to get that animal a forever home. Mm-hmm. And here's a person who's saying, I want that. I want that one.
Uh-huh.
And here's Todd standing in the background going, I don't think that's a good idea.
And
what happens there?
It can be explosive sometimes. Folks can get upset, and I can understand that. It is it's not just an emotionally charged environment we work in. It's as emotional for us as it is for the potential adopters coming through the door. And they do. They walk in and they see a look or a particular animal in a kennel and think, that's the one I want. We encourage them to spend a little bit more time with the animal, learn their personality to make sure it indeed agrees with your lifestyle and personality as well. Because if they don't, no matter how good the pet parent is or how good the particular animal is, If their lifestyles don't mesh up, it can be an unfortunate situation where the animal's going to come back into our care, and we try to avoid that for obvious reasons.
One of the things that I've heard different people who are potential adopters say is they ask too many questions, and they require too many things. And I don't think they want these animals to get homes because here I am. Mm-hmm. That must be another tough situation.
It is. You know, we do ask a lot of questions, but we do it in order to find that next home that we believe is setting this animal up for success. It's not enough to just want an animal. It is a responsibility, and it's a life. There is a lot that goes into the responsible care of an animal, and we do our best, and we do ask a fair amount of questions, but we do it in the spirit of trying to find that positive placement. It is not to make it unreasonably difficult to adopt an animal. It really is about finding the right home for the right animal. And although it can be disheartening to some adopters, I think when they sit back and think about it, they would appreciate the fact that we are so diligent when we do try to find that next home for an animal, because it is so important to us that it is the last forever home they go to.
I always say that, and I'll probably get in big trouble for this, but I know people who can spend more time trying to find a pair of shoes than deciding that they want to go in and adopt an animal.
You know, as sad as that is unfortunately very true. And this is some of the things we're trying to combat at the SPCA with, we don't want you to make a snap decision. We don't do gifts. We do personal adoptions to families. That is what we do because we want to make sure all of the individuals in the family, mom, dad, brother, sister, are all on board and can live harmoniously with the animal they've chosen to bring into their care.
And what if there's already a pet at home?
That takes it to an additional level. If there is already a pet in a home, we will do meet and greets to make sure, reasonably make sure that they're going to get along without any major issues. You know, anytime you adopt an animal or bring a strange animal into your home, you have to have a sort of hyper sense of vigilance because it's strange to them, it's a stressful environment, and they're just trying to figure out themselves, where do I fit in this new pack? This is what we're trying to do and baby step our adopters into this introduction process. When you bring a new animal home, it's not unheard of for it to take 4, 6, 12, 18 weeks for the animal to truly sort of calm down and understand, okay, this is where I'm going, I'm not leaving, these are my family, and I understand inside this family where I belong and what my place in the pack.
And now I know where the door is if I have to go out.
Absolutely. That's what we hope for. I know where the door is.
That's actually one of the other big things is I've heard from other people, you know, well, we adopted this animal out and it came, they brought him back in a week and a half because we're going on the floor. Well, really?
When you adopt an animal from a shelter, you know, we try to educate, and hopefully our potential adopters keep in mind that these animals have lived in a kennel. It may have been for 2 days. It may have been for 24 months. This animal has been in a kennel. So the idea of housebreaking may be something that they have, but again, they don't know your home. They don't know where the door is. They don't know your routine. And a dog especially will find comfort in knowing what to expect. So routines are absolutely keystone in making an animal comfortable in low-stress environment. So it's a process, no doubt. It is a process when you bring a new animal into your home. But if you're committed to that forever friend, I can assure you they will get what you're trying to teach them. And when they do, the beauty and heartwarming that it brings to your life is something that is could be truly incomparable.
And again, we talk about animals, but everybody seems to be geared toward the puppies, the kittens. And that is an even longer commitment.
Oh my.
And you don't realize that when you, because they're cuddly, and then you get the, they've grown up now.
Yeah, that cute puppy's now 110 pounds.
Not so cuddly anymore.
You know, puppies are great. Kittens are great. They're a lot of fun. They're super cute. They love to cuddle. They're a lot of work. Mm-hmm. You know, a puppy is, or a kitten, can be every bit as much as that 2-year-old toddler running around the house, putting everything in its mouth, exploring the world through, in a dog situation, through their mouth. They're going to chew on things. They're going to taste things. They're going to put their mouth on it because this is what babies do. This is how babies explore their environment and our infant puppy is no different than these animals. And they're really looking to their people for guidance and show me.
Oh, but it was so cute.
Yeah.
He ate my shoe. How cute was that?
It's cute until it's 110 pounds and it became, he ate my couch.
But you do have older pets as well.
Absolutely. We have older pets. We have senior pets. We offer a senior to senior adoption discount. So if a senior adoptive family in our community is looking for a senior pet, we'd encourage them to come down. It is half price for them to adopt through us because we know the value that it can bring to an individual's life in just sheer joy, but in health and wellness benefits to owning an animal. So they're all wonderful, from puppy to elderly. They're all wonderful animals and all deserve that love and attention and care that we hold so dear to our heart.
That's why I can't volunteer for you, because they'd all be at my house by the end of the day.
But careful, Paula, we can arrange that.
Yeah, I bet we could. But let's talk about volunteers.
Sure.
Because, again, you wouldn't be able to do all the programs. You're out there in the community. Mm. You're bringing your animals to different functions and all these different things and parades and all. So either you'd have to multiply yourself.
You know, and we are exceptionally fortunate to have a wonderful community outreach coordinator. She is incredibly passionate and dedicated to what we do at the shelter. It speaks to her heart, and it's incredibly obvious. People, when they meet her, her name's Chelsea Feldman, when they meet Chelsea, they really want to be a part of what Chelsea's got going on, because she is so wonderful in the way she can articulate and share the passion and dedication she feels for our animals, and it becomes very infectious amongst our community and the individuals we're very fortunate to have as part of our team.
And then what about those volunteers? How do they get in touch with you? And I know a lot of people will say, oh, I have to do some community service hours for this program or that program, so I'm going to call the SPCA. Sure. And sometimes you want to say to them, why? Because it's easy? Because they want you to come there? Or because you're hoping to get something positive out of it?
Well,
you can't say that, though.
Well, and, you know, that's certainly our hope, is that you're coming to the SPCA for the right reasons. It's not because it's easy. Because truth be told, it may be physically easier than some other volunteer positions, but the emotional toll it can take on an individual just to see the animals come and go is huge. And if anybody in our community is interested in volunteering, I would absolutely encourage them to give us a call at 570-825-4111 and ask to speak with our community outreach coordinator. And she would love to walk you through the process and encourage you and share with you the many, many, many different ways that you can volunteer at our shelter. It is not just with animals. There is off-site and events, as you had mentioned, Paula. There is dog walking and administrative work. There is an absolute plethora of tasks and responsibilities that we could not be as positive as we are in our community without the help of this army of volunteers.
Well, it's nice to get to talk to you, because you are the executive director of the SPCA in Luzerne County, and that gives everyone a perspective of what you are hoping to get the word out about. But what would you like to leave with our audience as a last thought to kind of wrap up, you know, coming from York, being here now?
You know, one thing that our organization educates our community on quite often is our SPCA in Luzerne County is completely autonomous. We are an independent organization. We are not affiliated with any parent company or overreaching corporate entity that controls our organization. We are a local entity that serves and helps our local community. You know, there's always the mantra of give local, help local. That could not be more true. You give local, the money stays local, it helps your neighbors, it helps the animals in your community, in your neighborhood. That is certainly a sentiment that I want our community to hear and take to heart. And the final thing I'd like to leave them with is, it truly takes a village. We can move our community towards a more humane society if we all work together and we all believe in the value of the animals we choose to share our lives with. It can be a beautiful thing if we just come together and work it as a community.
Thanks for listening to Special Edition, a weekly look at the issues in the news and the personalities shaping the stories. A production of Intercom Communications.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.